Welcome to the launch of the Living Healthy Despite Chronic Conditions podcast, where the focus is always on joy, abundance, and well-being. I'm your host, Erica Bridgman, and on each show, I dialogue with people who are doing amazing creative ventures that were motivated by conditions that, at first, were difficult, unwelcomed, and even life-threatening in some cases. I'm excited to talk with today's guest because he is one of my first podcast interviews for this show. His name is Louise Condon, and he is a relationship coach at lastingloveconnection.com, where he also produces a podcast by that same name. As a relationship coach, Louise has taught the work of Dr. John and Julia Gottman to over 200 impoverished couples. He has also been a wrestling coach, as well as once holding the position of senior director of a nonprofit that housed homeless men and women. Welcome, Louise.
It's exciting. I'm excited by your show, Erica.
Well, thank you so much. You have a very interesting story that goes back to your childhood. Can you share with us this story and how it connects you to now living healthy despite chronic conditions?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I am originally from Colombia. Was born in 1983 at the height of the cocaine cartel, which started in Medellin, Colombia, and that's where I'm from. When I was born, my mother was an addict, an alcohol addict and cocaine addict, and some other drugs that I don't know what the names are, but they only exist in Colombia as far as I'm aware of. My mom was 25 years old with three kids, and I was the youngest one. And when I was about 5 years old, my mother was murdered, and I was left homeless with an uncle who took me and my sister in, but he didn't have a home, he didn't have a bank account, he didn't have a job. So we bounced around from place to place. Through kind of a long series of and complicated events, I ended up in an orphanage, was adopted into the United States by two very loving parents here. And about 5 years after living with them, they divorced, and I primarily lived with my father, my adopted dad. And, you know, that really impacted my sense of family, the importance of family. And, you know, even though my parents in the United States divorced, I still had a really awesome family. That doesn't mean it didn't hurt and it didn't confuse me when my parents divorced. And that, you know, my earlier childhood didn't impact me when I was a teenager. You know, when I was 18 years old, though, I was very committed to family and forgiveness. And I went back to Colombia, met my father there for the very first time, reunited with my sister, found out that I had an older brother who I'd never really met, and reunited with the rest of my family, you know, began to work on my forgiveness towards my father who I'd never met until I was 18. And, you know, that those experiences have really shaped me in regards to, you know, the value that people have in my life, the value that family has, and currently my work as a relationship coach, working with families, trying to help them have lasting love and being positive role models for the kids and the spouses and, you know, just anyone in their life.
That's amazing. I didn't know the depth of the history of your family back in Colombia and then you coming to the States. How old were you when you arrived in the United States?
Yeah, I was 8 years old when I came to the U.S.
You spoke in our pre-chat about how you began to have different health ailments and how that really affected how you were in terms of physical. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
Yeah, definitely. When I first came to the United States, I started to eat some of the same foods and, of course, different foods that I hadn't eaten as a child, you know, so eggs, things that had gluten and wheat in them, having more milk and dairy than I was used to. You know, I grew up poor and milk isn't always something that was available to me as a child. Neither were bread products. That wasn't like a big thing that I ate. And very soon after being here in the United States, I started to get very sick. My tonsils would swell up almost to the point that the tonsils would be touching. So I'd have a hard time breathing. My sinuses would get very clogged. I would start getting kind of lightheaded, fuzzy, feel really dizzy, would be kind of like pretty much bedridden, really wouldn't want to get up. Maybe sometimes we'd get a temperature. And this was all due to allergies. We didn't know that. So I'd get sick for like a week and I would just lay around a lot, drink a lot of water, and, have some various types of like soups, like chicken soup and stuff and chicken broth. But after a while, my mom, took me to a naturopath and had me tested, and we discovered that I'm allergic to pollen, grass, eggs, dairy, processed sugars, and a few other things, and gluten. And those were a lot of the different things that I was eating. But I never had those allergies as a child. Like I wasn't a kid who got sick when I was in Colombia. And, I strongly believe that it's just due to the heavy levels of processing that the food in the United States go through.
Yes, that was actually a very common story that I heard of how people who come to the United States, whether as children or even as adults, come here and then experiences illnesses and diseases that were not prevalent back in their home country. That's definitely a theme that I've heard from people who've migrated here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So how did your mom and how did you deal with that? What were some of the solutions or some of the ways that you tried to cope with being so allergic to really basic things when you grass and
The grass is kind of a minimal one. It's more like once you pack things on top of each other, then, my allergies to grass and pollen are aggravated, So it's not like I had a strong allergy where I just couldn't be around it, right? It was I can't think of the right word right now, but I couldn't take very much of those foods in. And if I took too many of the foods in, then, the mucus would build up, the dizziness, the sense of feeling really weak, fever might come up, upset stomach. And really the biggest thing that we had to do is start eliminating those foods, So I didn't eat eggs anymore, except maybe once or twice a week. We took gluten out and we started reading the directions on the food, or not the directions, but the ingredients on the foods to make sure that I wasn't eating foods that had those, a lot of things like soy sauce that has gluten in it. And that's not something that we really think about. But if you have an allergy to these foods, you really have to read the ingredients. Sometimes you go as far as going on the website, because when you look at labels that say natural flavors, for example, that can be a 2-page long list. And some of those ingredients contain gluten within them. So if someone has celiac disease, it's incredibly important that they do, go on the internet and make sure that natural flavors doesn't include something that has gluten in it.
Being a very strong proponent of the mind-body connection and how the body can affect the mind and the emotions and vice versa, did you have those kinds of symptoms as well?
Even right now, like if I eat foods that aren't good for me, I notice that I feel kind of sluggish. Maybe I don't feel quite as positive. I don't feel quite as energized. So, those lessons from early on in my life apply very strongly to this day. I've played around a lot with nutrition. I've done a 3-month raw food diet where I wouldn't eat anything unless it was considered a raw vegan diet. So no rice, nothing that was cooked, no meats, and nothing that came from an animal. And, after 3 months of doing that, I lost a lot of weight. My sinuses were completely clear. I felt a little bit weak in the muscles, and then I've done heavy duty protein diets where I gain a lot of muscle, but felt a little bit sluggish. And I've also done high alkaline diets, and each one of those diets has their merits and each one has kind of their weaknesses as well. And foods strongly impact us. There's so many studies of people who have cancer and they change what they eat and boom, the cancer goes away, or they change what they eat along with bringing into their lives practices that increase a sense of calmness and love and gratitude.
What ages were you when you began this experimentation with your foods?
Well, you know, I had to start pretty young, around like 9 or 10, when we found out that I was allergic. You know, my parents were primarily the ones who took care of that. So they stopped feeding me a lot of the foods that had allergens in it. But then once I was in high school, I got really into sports and I started playing around with things. I also became, you know, very interested in Buddhism and various other kinds of spiritualities, and saw that many of them advised being a vegetarian. So I tried being a vegetarian for a year. And then after that, I tried being a vegan for a few months. That didn't work so well. It's very hard to be gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, just take out so many different things just due to my allergies plus being a vegan. So I didn't really enjoy that diet. And then I tried some bodybuilding diets as well in high school. And I continue to play around with my diet. You know, my favorite diets now as an adult are ones that focus on high alkaline, which is essentially eat a lot of foods that are green, have a lot of water, and drink liquids that are alkalizing, because that brings more oxygen into the body and also fights off disease.
One of the things that I'm curious about, as a person who has a chronic condition that might not be visible to other people, especially at a younger age, like when you're in your teens and young adulthood, how did other people, or like when you were socializing and going out and interacting with in a social situation, how did other people react to the fact that you may not have eaten the things that they were eating, drinking the things that they were drinking? Did you feel a little isolated from them? I mean, how welcoming were they?
You know, I didn't feel that so much, you know, when I would tell people, oh, I can't eat cheese, or I can't have something with bread on it. There was times when it's a little uncomfortable, right? Because you go to a family's house and they make or order a pizza or like a lasagna or pasta, or go to an Italian place and there isn't really anything on the menu. Those times are kind of challenging as a kid. But most of the time, you know, parents would ask me, or they would assume that I'm going to eat what everybody else is eating. So when they did assume, it was hard for me. I never really got looked at as being too weird, because it wasn't too weird that I didn't really eat pizza and I didn't really like it and I wasn't a big pasta fan. I can say that as an adult, though, when I tried being a raw foodist, for example, that was incredibly challenging, because, you know, people will ask you, oh, do you like this kind of food or that kind of food? And you say, you know, when I come over to your house, and if you're going to serve dinner, don't worry about it. I'm just going to bring some of my own food. And I pull out like 10 oranges, you know, or I pull out a huge salad, or, you know, I sit there and eat like a half a watermelon. So those were definitely kind of awkward moments to some degree, especially because most people kind of almost feel like, how are you going to live off fruits and vegetables? And there's a lot of people that do live that way. You know, there's a population-wise, it's a small percentage, but if you gathered all the people, it would still be a decent number of people. But it's hard to have to explain to people. And having, you know, wheat allergies, allergies to various foods, is challenging, because people want to give me something with cheese or eggs or something, and I have to say, you know what, I can't eat that. Or, you know, I had an egg yesterday, and because of my allergies, I can only eat 2 eggs a week. That means I can't have any more eggs. Learning how to tell people, you know, no, after they've asked me several times. I mean, this happens with my family, for example. They'll serve something with some cheese on it, and my mom will say, hey, you know, why don't you have some? And I said, well, I can't. My allergies are kind of flaring up right now. The pollen's pretty strong. And she'll say, well, you know, this is more like a goat cheese, or it's a softer cheese, so it's not going to be quite as hard on you. And, you know, mom, I know my body, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but I can't eat that. And, oh, you know, just give it a try. Or, you know, are you sure? And it's a matter of me learning how to be okay with, this is where my body's at, and I'm not going to argue with people. It's just, these are my limitations.
Right, right. I was thinking about when you are living with family or a partner, how one has to explain to them, even, it's funny, even somebody who can be very close to you, who may have raised you, given birth to you, and you still, there's still a disconnect and truly understanding I found that oftentimes it's just, you know, their desire to want to love me and give to me, but it's almost like, you know, there are different ways of loving and giving. So that's something that they have to learn.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And it's hard not to want to argue with people about it or feel like, my God, like I've known you for 30 years. How could you still be trying to talk me into eating cheese? Like, you know, that's not good for me. And that's just not a good route to go. You know, the best thing that you can do is just say, I really appreciate the offer, but I'm going to eat this or I'm going to eat that. Or sometimes just telling people, you know, I'm not a big advocate for lying, but sometimes it's kind of the best thing in my pocketbook for situations like that, like saying I'm not hungry. And then later on, you know, going out and getting some of my own food just because I like to avoid insulting people. You know, when I travel to other countries, that can be a really big issue too. People really want you to eat their food. But, you know, when I was a vegetarian and I went to Colombia, people really like eating pork in Colombia. It's a big thing and they really wanted me to eat pork. And I went to so many people's different homes and I would just say, you know, gosh, I really appreciate you offering me food, but I'm just not hungry. And then when I'd leave their house, you know, I was hungry and I would go out and get something that was vegetarian.
Yeah. Well, how has your condition provided you with something positive that you might not have had or developed without your condition?
You know, it's actually been a real gift for me because I think a lot of the foods that I can't eat, like dairy products and processed sugars, now I can eat them to some degree, but I can't eat very much. I think that they've really helped me a lot. I'll share a quick story. When I was in high school, I started to get acne and it was pretty bad. You know, I had zits and pimples on my face and, you know, have one like pop up right in the middle of my nose. And as a, you know, teenager, that's pretty embarrassing to have one just like right there. It's unavoidable. And it hurt, you know, it was hard for me to feel like, okay, I wasn't quite as attractive as everybody else or what's going on with my face. And I read this book called The Pericone Diet. And in it, he said, you know, your acne is due to your eating habits primarily and what you're taking in. And if you change what you take in, we can curb most of it. And if, you know, we can't, we can do some topical creams, we can, you know, do some pills, but let's start with diet. And I started eating salmon for breakfast, which was kind of odd, but I started doing it 2-3 times a week. I started eating more salads and my face cleared up. And for me, I turned it around as, okay, acne is not a bad thing. It's a gift. It's a sign that my body is telling me, hey, this isn't good for you. And I'm letting you know in a really light and gentle way, you know, because my friend on the other hand, who didn't have those allergies, he drinks at least a 20-ounce soda every single day. And now he has diabetes, you know. So if he had been gifted with some acne and some allergies, his body would have said, hey, I'm going to plug up your nose. I'm going to give you some extra acne. And I'm going to tell you this isn't good for you. And if you keep doing it, you're not going to look as good as you want to. And for me, that's a pretty small trade-off compared to, you know, getting diabetes or being short-winded or whatever else may come up. So that's been really the gift, is I have to be aware of what I eat. And I personally don't know too many people that can drink a lot of milk and it makes them feel good, or eat a lot of processed sugars and it doesn't have a bad turnaround for them, you know, where they don't feel quite as well, or they put on extra weight and it's hard to lose, or they just don't feel quite as energized. So I just have a heightened sensitivity to the foods that I eat, but it's heightened sensitivity does not mean that I'm not just as sensitive as everybody else. It's just I get that sensitivity and that feedback a lot sooner.
Yeah. So what is a typical day in terms of eating? You mentioned that you eat salmon, or you ate salmon at that time. So what is on the menu, let's say, you know, if you were going to start on a Monday and go to Friday? You know,
Well, my menu will consist, I like to eat a lot of brown rice. I like white rice, but I do have, I have noticed that if I eat too much white rice, there is a little bit of sensitivity to that as well. So I've been trying to increase my brown rice, some salmon if I can during the week, or tilapia. So a different type of fish, is just cheaper. I like to get some organic, really healthy sausage. I don't know if you can put those two words in the sentence, but I like eating sausage and I buy a lot of mixed greens, so like kale and spinach, and I'll cook those up and I will, you know, take like 5-7 cups, throw them in a pan, heat them up so they melt down. So it's about, you know, maybe 1 or 2 cups of greens. And I'll eat that for breakfast with some sausage and maybe some gluten-free toast. You know, I like to eat some gluten-free like soups. So there are like noodle soups that are made out of rice or quinoa. I enjoy taking that in. I have some protein shakes that I drink that are vegan. So they're primarily made with like vegetables or quinoa or rice or hemp or pea protein. And that's a majority. I mean, just the stuff I named off, buffalo meat, you know, like try to get free range organic. I like to eat a lot of organic food and I like to eat a lot of free range meats. I just believe that that's going to be a healthier meat. And I do consume quite a large quantities of meats just because I work out very heavily and I like to do some bodybuilding. So it might not be like the healthiest practice, but I try to make it as healthy as possible by including massive amounts of different vegetables. You know, just before I talked to you, I had a big bowl of soup with, you know, I took a whole head of broccoli and cooked it in there and about 3 or 4 cups of kale and mixed it in with my soup.
Well, that's amazing. Sounds delicious, first of all. You have a breadth of cooking skills and ways of taking something that somebody who may not have had your condition or a condition at all have to do. There's a creativity in how you prepare your food, would you say?
You know, in high school, my dad told me that he wanted me to cook dinner for the family once a week. At the time, I didn't really like it, but I just said, okay, if that's what you want, you know. So I did it. And, you know, after about 2 or 3 years of, you know, for the most part, cooking dinner for, you know, a small family once a week, I got very good at cooking and coming up with recipes and learning how to read recipes. And it's benefited me greatly. And it's also just allowed me to go into a grocery store and appreciate a wider variety of foods. And again, it's back to me and my friend, you know, the one who has diabetes. His cooking skills are not very broad. He tends to cook, you know, maybe 2 or 3 different meals. Most of the time, they come out of a box and you just mix whatever's in the box with water. Whereas I really don't like cooking things that come in boxes unless it's, you know, like some sort of noodle or something like that. But for the most part, I like my foods to kind of come in bulk items or come kind of bagged up and you have to create something, not just have something already pre-made for you. And I really believe that that's what makes a huge difference in our health and his health.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like food as art or cooking
Yeah,
as art. It's
exactly.
beautiful.
I honestly wish I was a better cook. It's, you know, we cook and eat so much, and yet so many of us take such little amount of time to really learn that art form.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you about shopping. Do you find, I don't know where you live, so how accessible are the foods that you are talking about in terms of seasonal and accessibility wise?
Well, I'm in California, so it's kind of people, a lot of people in California are health nuts. So I have no problem finding healthy grocery stores. Whenever I travel abroad is when things get kind of challenging. So I just spent 4 months traveling through Asia and I consumed very high levels of rice, soups. You know, I'd have to ask them to add extra vegetables to my food. I probably consumed a lot of MSG. You know, and the only thing that I did to try to help myself balance out some of those impacts of some of those foods that aren't so good is I walked around a lot and I drank tons of water and I made sure to order foods that, you know, were pretty heavy with the vegetables at least several times a week.
Yeah, I could imagine, like, if you are doing a lot of traveling, that it would be difficult to obtain the kinds of foods that you normally eat when you're at home. Or even if you have a highly busy schedule, I could imagine people who have a, you know, like somebody who's on call, like a doctor in an emergency room having to be on call and really having to be very thoughtful as to how they are going to feed themselves.
Yeah, you know, when I had a really busy schedule, my favorite thing to do was to cook up my meals for pretty much the whole week. So, you know, I would cook my gluten-free pastas and have a big bowl of that. I would cook up some chicken and have a big bowl of that and have a few things so that then I've already made rice and a variety of some of those items that take a long time to cook. So I'd spend my Saturday or Sunday making those foods. And then during the week, I could just, you know, dish out some pasta, dish up a little chicken, put some sort of sauce over it, put it in a Tupperware. Boom, that's lunch for the day. The next day, I'd grab some chicken and some rice, throw some of those, maybe the night before, cook up some veggies, and then put it all in a Tupperware. And that's my lunch for the next day.
Wow, that's great. That's great. What types of activities beyond cooking and preparing foods for yourself, what kinds of activities do you engage in that minimize your condition and maximize your feelings of well-being and positive outlook?
You know, a really big one that's really come back into my life recently is spending some time each day closing my eyes and feeling the sensations in my body. So, you know, as somebody who does a lot of weightlifting, it's honestly one of my favorite things. It just opens up my lungs. It pumps my body up. I like looking fit, and I love going to the gym and meeting people and working out and tossing weights around. It's one of my favorite things to do in life. And I got an injury recently, and it really made me think about, okay, how am I utilizing my body? What's my awareness of myself? And so I've started to spend some time each day just closing my eyes, 5 or 10 minutes, and feeling any sensation in my body. So, you know, the other day my stomach felt kind of upset and uncomfortable, and I just closed my eyes and I just allowed my attention to go into that upset feeling in my stomach and just feel it. You know, a lot of times we try to change sensations in our bodies, but for me the practice is feel the sensation without trying to do anything with it. It can go, it can stay. There's just no sense of me trying to do anything with it. But I also have some wisdom behind that I know that 99% of the time, the result will be that sensation will change. And many times it will either diminish or just completely go away. And if I spend some time every day doing that, I just found this overall sense of increased awareness of myself, as well as just feeling a whole lot better, you know. So I tuned into my stomach and I found out, you know, I've been feeling really nervous. I've been a little bit worried about this and that. And just by tuning into my body, I felt those emotions like, wow, I've been really nervous and my stomach is upset because I've been anxious. And now I'm feeling that nervousness and I'm aware that I've been anxious. And then it just went away.
Someone I was talking to describe people that there can be healing agents when it comes to people. There can be people who are described as healing agents or people who can be described as disease agents, or almost you can say like vampire energy suckers. Are there people in your life that you consider to be healing agents?
You know, just a little piece about that. You know, marriage education research. So marriage research has shown that we can get sick for every 7 negative things that our partner tells us. These are kind of like put downs or criticisms. For every 7 that we receive, we get sick one time a year. So it's pretty fascinating stuff when you look at that. And, you know, you can look at couples that fight constantly and you'll notice that, you know, they tend to be unhealthy. They tend to have lowered immune systems. Whereas, you know, there's some research out there kind of showing, you know, the power of words and how words can impact us, right? And there is some man that has been found to be one of the fastest language learners in the world. And they asked him, how are you learning languages so fast? And he said, when I hear a word, I see a color, and then I memorize the word by seeing its color. And my Buddhist teacher said to me, the reason why he sees colors is because words are imbued with certain energies. And I try to surround myself with people that say good things to me, you know, and that inspire me and motivate me and make me feel an extra sense of value, of love, of I have, you know, I have peace. I'm providing something for them and they're providing something for me of high value, which is love. I mean, that to me is, that is the most valuable thing. And yes, there are people that can hurt us, you know, that's why relationships are so important. Research also has shown that couples who are happier tend to be happier at work. And couples who have a lot of problems in their relationship tend to have more, there's a direct correlation with problems at work. And it doesn't go the other way around. People who are happy at work do not certainly show that they're happier at home. But if you're happier at home, there's a direct correlation that you will be happier at work. So it's so important for us to be around people that make us feel good. And I include animals in that. You know, my dog, he's my best friend. Petting him makes me feel better than anything else in the world. I absolutely love my dog and he loves me unconditionally. And that's my take on it. And I really believe that. And, you know, there was some recent research done where they gave a group of people at traders, stock traders, some of the top 10 best traders in the stock trade were given dogs for a couple weeks. And they tested the people before and after and during the study, and they found that the cholesterol and stress levels and oxytocin levels, you know, all changed when these people had dogs. And all their levels of cortisol and stress lowered. And when they pet the animal, their stress levels changed as well. You know, so when you pet an animal, your oxytocin goes up, so does the dog's. Your, you know, cholesterol levels can drop even. So yeah, there are people, beings and creatures that can make us feel better. And the more that we surround ourselves with that, the more of a positive impact it's going to have on our health.
Well, I've heard stories, amazing stories of animals being brought into high security prisons and forming a relationship with prisoners. So each of them would have a dog, and the relationship, it was like some of them would describe, this is the first time ever that I've had a relationship with anything that I felt I could trust and that they could trust me. And I think that's beautiful work. I totally agree. I have a cat that I just adore, April. And we snuggle in the bed together because she loves getting in the bed when, you know, and it just feels like a snug fest. So I love that. I totally think that's awesome.
Yeah, I read a study once about that they were looking at elderly, like rest homes or, you know, like retirement living. And they found that the ones that had a cat tended to report being happier and live longer.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is also true for hospitals. I know that they have programs where they bring in therapy animals to people in the hospital, and it's their recovery period is quickened by the presence of animals that way. So that's awesome.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So in our remaining minutes, I wanted to ask you, what are three or more things, maybe three things that have worked for you and that you would recommend to other people when it comes to living healthy despite chronic conditions?
You know, looking at the research of health and wellness, one of the number one things that all of them share is that eating a high level of vegetables is going to impact your health in significant ways. It doesn't matter what diet you're looking at, whether it's microbiotic diet, a vegan diet, vegetarian diet, even bodybuilders diets, they all say you need to eat a lot of vegetables. And so that would be the number one thing, is just consume a lot of veggies, especially the green ones. You know, number two is have some exercise on a daily basis. I go kind of stir crazy if I don't get some sort of exercise on a daily basis. So whether that's, you know, taking like an hour long walk or preferably going to the gym or a bike ride. And then third, try to spend some time each day closing your eyes and relaxing your body and bringing some attention into just being still.
Well, thank you so much, Luis, for joining me here on the show. How can people connect with you?
Definitely. If anybody's interested in learning more about my work or just wants to get in touch with me and say, hello, I heard the show, whatever you want to tell me, I'm open to it. LastingLoveConnection.com, and you can contact me through there, or you can Google Luis Congdon and find me on Facebook or Twitter or whatever sort of medium you would like to get in touch with me.
And please do, everyone, because Luis is amazing, Amazing soul. Well, that's it for this edition of Living Healthy Despite Chronic Conditions. I'd like to thank my guest, Luis Condon, for joining me today. And I want to thank you, the listeners of this podcast. You can find a new episode of the Living Healthy Despite Chronic Conditions podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And please be sure to give a rating and review, as well as a like on our Facebook page. And finally, please leave a comment at peasinapod.org with your own ideas and suggestions of how to live healthy despite chronic conditions. I've been your host, Erica Bridgman. Till next time, cheers.